love the compendium of games.
You've got your snakes and ladders, you've got your Ludo.
Drafts,
of course, drafts.
You might have got a pack of cards. The little ones like you get out of the Christmas crackers.
Them ones out of the Christmas crackers. that and the little tiny compass.
Danny Baker, weekdays 3 till 5. On BBC London 94.9. Listening to Big George
on BBC London 94.9.
Call
020 722 42000.
Big George.
Good morning to you and welcome to the show. What's up, Ollie? For heaven's sake, we haven't even started yet, man. Just leave it. All right. Actually, you're not getting bad, man. It's not bad. That's not too bad, actually. Oh dear. I mean, you have to give him that. He has been trying hard, and he seems to have got a bit of a rhythm going. Right. You are tuned to BBC London 94.9. We're me, Big George, and there's all kinds of things happening here. I can't even go into it because, well, if I did, well, I'd have to come round and have to silence you. So, let's just leave it at that, okay? If you want to get through about anything, is there anything that's got your goat, anything you think is interesting, give me a call right now. 020-722-42000. We've got John the Cabbie coming up in about 2 minutes' time with Talk the Walk. One of the most interesting features anywhere on any radio program, anywhere on the planet. And, to be honest with you, it's not much of a news day today. If you want to set the agenda, you can.
With the one who picked you up, lifted you up, gave you new hope, stood by you when you walk. Who was the one to make you shine like new money? Laughed at your jokes, even though they wasn't funny. Who was the one that gave you a helping hand? Never forget how I helped you hide from the man.
Tune to BBC London 94.9 with me, Big George, right the way through till 6 o'clock in the morning. Do you know what? It ain't going to change. That is the deal. Unless Mark Thompson finds out I'm actually broadcasting, because I don't really know. And he comes down and he pulls me out. But I've wedged the chairs against the door. There's no way he's getting in. So, it's down to you and me. If there's anything that's got your goat, anything you want to get off your chest, we've had a heavy week this week, and if there's anything light you want to tell me about, 020-722-4000. You can email me as well. We have that facility here. We are the BBC. We spend up to 20 quid on technology a year. The email address is biggeorge, all one word, biggeorge@bbc.co.uk, or you can always text. We can do that too. Text number 07786 200 949. Eileen, I'll get yours in a second. About 30 seconds time, we got John the cabby. He's been on one of his Talk the Walks. Now, I reckon that if you could bottle this, put it on the shelves, we would make a million. But you know what? You get it absolutely free every Friday morning around about this time here on BBC London 94.9. Why? Because this is the home of London. It's like all those other stations that pretend they're part of London. You've got to be joking, mate. We are the BBC. What can you do this weekend that won't cost you anything? In fact, what can you do in London that don't cost nothing at all? Talk the Walk with John the Cabby, BBC 94.9. We live in the most beautiful city on the planet Earth, and let's go around and have a look at the joys that are there to be seen. Talk the Walk with John the Cabby, BBC 94.9. My name's Big George, and I talk to cab driver John Kennedy about the best walks in London. It's fascinating. Talk the Walk with John the Cabby, BBC 94.9. And here's a cast iron guarantee. It's walking through the streets of London, but without any sight of Ralph McTell.
Oi!
Morning, John.
Morning.
How you doing? All right?
All right. Not bad. Not bad.
I tell you what, I'm going for a new image. I've decided to become a cat burglar. Trouble is that I don't know where they keep the cats. And who's going to bite off me anyway? How can I fence a load of cats?
The Cat in the Hat.
Oh, don't tell me about Dr. Seuss. I remember reading one of those to my kids years ago, and it used to annoy me. That the cat, he said, that's hat, and that's all right. And it's, get to the end of the sentence, mate. How you doing, all right?
Not bad, not bad at all, actually. The weather's cold.
Yeah.
Snowed last night.
How much did it snow? Was it just...
Just a little flurry down in Colliers Wood, Tooting, that area, a bit down in Sutton, and then it stopped.
Right.
And then it was just cold again this morning, and then...
Do you think we're going to have a cold winter? Because you've been out loads of winters. People like cab drivers, they would know, because you're out, you see the weather all the time, you know, day in, day out, year after year.
Definitely colder this year.
Yeah?
I mean, it's quite a lot, let's be honest, I mean, it's quite a long spell of cold weather, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We've had about, 2-3 weeks of it?
Yeah. And I don't mind it at all.
I'm of the view, I actually think it gets rid of all the germs it does. And,
right, Ollie, now then, I want you to take a load of those and a load of those.
Just two of those are fine, thank you.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Why, are you on a diet?
No.
You just don't want to get tubby like me and John?
No burgers this week.
No? Oh.
That's next week.
I didn't eat until Tuesday.
No apple pie. Next week.
Ollie had the apple pie.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. He had the apple pie. I wanted to smash it in his face, but he wouldn't have it. He said he'd get a tribunal on me. I thought, is it worth it? And I'm sure they wouldn't find me guilty, but... I didn't chance it.
A tribunal.
Yeah. Oh, that's what we want. More tribunals.
That's what we don't have enough of them, do we?
Yeah.
You know, rather than court, we need a tribunal. Yeah. Like, the word just sounds good.
I know, yeah.
You're in front of a tribunal.
What I want to do more than anything is I want to be on a quango.
Quasi-quango,
and talk about the quagmire of what's going on. But anyway.
Sounds like a musical instrument, a tribunal, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I can see that.
Yeah. A tribunal.
Yeah.
I play the tribunal. I play the quango.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I'm on the tribunal. You're on the quango. It's a double act. If only vaudeville was still alive. Do you know, I caught a bit of vaudeville when I was doing this TV show. And also when my son joined the circus. All the vaudevillians come from Eastern Europe now. You don't really get them in this country. You know, the jugglers and the tumblers and all that business. I love it, man. I mean, a great juggler is a sight to behold. Because you're thinking, how do they do that? How do they throw all those balls up in the air and catch them and stuff like that? And still be able to look, you know, and wear those ridiculous clothes as well. So, anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. What we're here to talk about? Talk the Walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9. Where are we going?
Well, we're in Pearl War Museum. We've gone south of the Thames, just over Lambeth Bridge, head along Lambeth Road.
Right.
And just keep going straight, come to a junction with Kennington Road. And you'll see, then, just to your right, some flags are up and a bit of a park in front of it. So continue down Lambeth Road, and then to your right-hand side, you'll notice these two white pillars, and you'll notice a lot of coaches always there. Very popular venue, this is. And what's good about this place is a lot of school children are visiting, and that's good.
Right.
Because although it's called the Imperial War Museum, there's nothing, I'd say, imperial about it in the sense it's not vitriolic, far from it. It does not glorify war.
It tells a story, doesn't it? That's what it does. It doesn't apologise, it doesn't glory, it tells you what happened.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I'll tell you what.
It doesn't wimp out as well, doesn't it?
No,
doesn't wimp
not at
out,
all.
And it doesn't carp on. You know, it tells you the story. It tells you the stories of, you know, major, you know, like battles. And, I mean, I think it's one of the best history experiences you can have.
Mm. Bit about the area though, Lambeth Road, like I said, is it's the junction with St George's Road, actually, with that end. So we're at the right near that sort of the real epicentre of London. Mm-hmm. I spoke about it in the past, the Elephant and Castle. That is the true centre. If you look at a big map of London, we've got a cool revenue, Homer, doing the knowledge.
Yeah.
We should actually move London about 1 mile to the south, make the Elephant and Castle the centre. Maybe we could move Nelson's Column. They're doing a bit of...
That'd be different, wouldn't it?
Put Nelson's Column at the Elephant and Castle. You know, if you actually look at a big map of London, it does actually... All the roads do seem to lead there, actually.
Elephant Castle?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. If you actually look, there's two big roundabouts there. It's quite a big gyratory system. And they do just have a natural look of heading to that area. Very, very busy with traffic. But we're at St George's Road... And Lambeth Road. And what we'll notice is there's a big cathedral nearby, St George's Cathedral, Roman Catholic Cathedral. I'm mentioning that because when I was at school, my Roman Catholic school as a young lad, we got half a day off or a day off to go and see Pope John the Paul.
All right.
Yeah, he turned up in a Pope mobile. And then we all bunked off school in the afternoon and then got in trouble the day after.
Pope mobile. I always thought that was faith in action. I mean, it's like, I'm the Pope, I'm here as a conduit from God, and I'm behind bulletproof glass.
Yes. Well, there are loonies out there, aren't they?
I mean, and that bloke who did shoot him, but it's like...
The reality is, though, I mean, it's, you know, that the Pope is immortal, isn't it? But not immortal, amortal. You've got Notre Dame, you have, it's a high school, a Roman Catholic school, sister school to my school, St Thomas the Apostle, then St Veronica's further down the road. And so it's the Diocese of Southwark, the area. But what you have got in front of the museum is Gerald E. Harmsworth Park. There is an actual park in front of the Imperial War Museum, and it's a very beautiful park. A lot of wedding parties use it to have their photographs taken when they come out the actual cathedral.
Right.
Busy, busy area, though. Busy junction. You've got to be careful whatever side of the road you're on, wherever you're crossing. It's one of those sort of like road networks. It's just a lot heading. Everything's always heading into London. You can get on the Westminster Bridge Road.
Where does it get when it gets there? Because, if you think about it, all the motorways in the mornings between sort of like 7:30 and 9:30, it's log jam traffic coming in London. Where do they all go?
Well, I mean, underground car parks, there's plenty of them in the city. I mean, there are people still working there, thank God. You know, it's and it is. It's just people parking up, and it's people just they dissipate, they disappear, innit? A lot of it is people going to a place, isn't it? That's the majority of the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally, you notice after midday, it tends to start then, after 2 o'clock certainly, people then start heading in the other direction. You do notice that. It's funny, it's a bit like a tidal flow, yeah. isn't it? You know, how people come in and then literally then rush out. But what we'll notice, as we go through these two white columns, the gates now, the main entrance on Lambeth Road, you walk dead straight through a circular grassed area. And what you'll notice in front of you is two big 15-inch naval guns. These are from the... and these are massive.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot believe how big these guns are. These come off First World War ships. I think a Queen Elizabeth type ship it had been.
They're like the old galleon cannons, but 100 times bigger, aren't they?
These are massive.
And they shot, you know, like lumps of lead, didn't they?
What's even better is around the base
mm-hmm.
are the shells. And they painted them yellow.
Yeah.
And it's quite funny. You can sit on these two, on either side, there's these two park benches, and you are sitting there amongst the old, obviously, duds now. But they're there, and they painted them yellow. And it's awesome. You think the idea is someone's going to launch a projectile like this at someone with a tip on the end. And it does sort of like, and then you look at the rear end of the gun, that where you've got you can open the back up. I mean, and then you just think, so it's math, the operation
mm-hmm.
itself. And it's in this big concrete plinth. What's even more funny is as you walk past it and then look back, you think, I wouldn't want to live in that house down the road. Because they're in the direct line, you know, and they haven't tipped them up. But you wouldn't want to be on the recall on the end of that. Far from it.
You wouldn't want to be the bloke who loaded it up either, would you?
No. I mean, this is war. This was, you know, naval power, sea power. I mean, awesome, I'd say. Really is awesome. I mean, and the guns, they're imposing. They really are. I mean, they just, because the way you walk down the path, they stare above you, either side of you, and you have to choose which way you walk round. Like I said, two benches, about eight shells painted like a goldeny yellow, not a luminous yellow, a goldeny yellow, with a gloss on them, just so they stand out. So they're actually ornaments, they are. And then you come to the building itself. A beautiful building, designed by a chap called Sidney Smirk. And it was originally a psychiatric hospital, part of the Bethlehem Royal Hospital, which is the Maudsley, which is in Camberwell right now. That's part of the Bethlehem.
That was originally the Maudsley?
That was originally a psychiatric hospital, right. Part of the Bethlehem Royal uh-huh. Hospital. Okay, so, it changed. I mean, we had an Imperial War Museum was set up in 1917, various different sites, and then eventually it was around 1930-odd, it got to this venue, and they're cleaning it up on the outside now. Again, it's a traditional building. You can see at the front of the... I mean, I did manage to nab hold of a, you know...
Did you have to pay for the programme, or...?
I'm not... I've decided, due to the credit crunch, I'm not declaring, all right?
Okay.
I did mention...
Did you haggle?
I did mention I was doing a radio show tonight, right. So, I mean, that's all I'll say on it. But it's a beautiful-looking building. Again, the Roman columns at the front. You can see the two guns there, and obviously this is in spring or summertime, you can see the flowers blooming in the garden. And then it actually is a brick built-in with wonderful, beautiful rectangular Georgian windows, very small windows on the top, a balustrade, and then a beautiful tower. And it's going to look fantastic when it's cleaned up again. And then we walked up the stairs. You go through the stairs, go through a small security checkpoint, asked to see me bag they did. That's no issue there. I think I quite like that. And then you're funneled. It's quite clever. It's free admission, but you are funneled past a donation box, and you are, you know, like you are funneled, and it's optional, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, because obviously, look, they do receive monies, obviously via. I think they're part of the culture media, Department of Culture, Media and Sport. Yeah. Receive monies via the National Lottery, but like all museums, if they can gain any more money, it means mm-hmm. they can put more exhibitions on. And so I did donate a couple of pounds. Was it took me a bit of loose shrapnel? I had an hour and a half. It's peanuts, isn't it? Really, to be honest with you, I was give away a small tip. I give away, but and then you go into the main entrance, walk through, and I didn't know this was on. It was to do with the Windrush and war.
All right,
and to the left and the right, a fantastic exhibition of people from Jamaica and all the West Indies, the different islands out there, and how they'd helped in the First and Second World Wars, and showing how these people fought for Britain mm-hmm. and then left Britain and then come back on mm-hmm. the Windrush, on that original boat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it showed you some... You've got to go. I mean, this hasn't been publicised much, actually. this show. It's a small exhibition, but it's wonderful. Interactive. Telephones there, you can hear. What was nice was just the pictures were beautiful. There was a beautiful picture of an airman with two young white children, and he's then giving them toys that his people had made on their island for the kids here.
How fantastic.
Yeah, and you know, and you think yourself, well, there you go then. I mean, it's we talk about equality, we talk about other people thinking about other people and helping other people, and there it was happening then, you know, in the Second World War.
Yeah.
And that man himself, as it was just wonderful. Stills, video image, it was, and they've done all the jobs that everyone else had done, no different, and the women as well, done all the jobs that people had done here. But it was just Water Windrush, I think it was called. And it was, to me, I didn't expect this. It was quite moving. It was. It catches you straight away.
Yeah.
Because it's to your left and right. But you can see, you know, like you're in a sweet shop and you can see the candy, but then to your left and right is something that's is intriguing you.
Mm-hmm.
Good layout. Really good layout. Because you can't not walk past it. You can.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you did, you'll feel a bit guilty.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, I like the way they laid it out. I really did. It was a lovely exhibition, and this wasn't
one you had to pay extra for.
No, not at all. That's what was nice about it. So you've just gone in the main door, and it's to your left and your right, and then you walk into this beautiful auditorium, and it's just. I mean, who would have thought you could put a Sopwith Camel, a Polaris missile, a V-2 rocket, a Heinkel, you know, jet engine, one that the Nazis, an American Mustang, a trolley bus, anti-tank tank, this evil looking thing that the Germans invented. It really was, and then it was just a mass of
hardware,
military
yeah.
hardware. And then there was Monty's tank from his Battle of Alamein. His tank, and these tanks that the Brits had, the initial ones didn't have turrets. They had a small turret that could only move left to right, so very very small angle. So you had to. The only way you could fire a proper shell off with it, and it wasn't particularly a big barrel on it, would be to manoeuvre the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And it just showed you Monty's, and it showed a little armoured car it did, like with the Desert Rat logo on. You know, then you saw the American tank, you know, the Sherman there. I mean, it's you know, and you're going through a bit of time here, a bit of history, but then you see these howitzers, then you just think, this is all about death, destruction, isn't it? And yet, it looks, in a weird way, it sounds horrible for me saying this, it looks so beautiful, this stuff.
No, I mean, it's beautifully precision-made equipment, but the end result of it is destruction.
Yeah, completely. And that's how, I don't know, you just get the feeling of there is something beautiful about this place. And then you saw a V2 rocket, you can't believe the size of that thing.
Mm.
My God. You know, what we're talking about, the V1, the V2, something like 6,000 it was.
Yeah.
Had been launched on, effectively, London
and
the southeast. Killing thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
The V2, the V1 looks evil.
Is that thing that if you could hear it, it was okay. It's when you stopped hearing it.
The silence, that means it was coming for you normally. I mean, it was like once it cut out on the V1, certainly. But the V2 they have there, I mean, and you see that what's interesting is not the technology. It's all nuts and bolts still. That's what I find weird about it, you know, and you can see the nuts and bolts.
It's engineering. It's the same as a steam tractor engine. It's the same manufacturers that were manufacturing, you know, the lifts at collieries and things like that, that were making these things in, you know, because this was in the 30s. You know, the Industrial Revolution was right at its peak at this
and
point.
And this is, what you remember, this is cutting edge stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, to see a Spitfire, you get a beautiful view of the Supermarine Spitfire you do underneath.
Yeah.
But what's beautiful about this area in, there are many levels and floors. I think we're talking four floors and a lower level.
Yeah.
Now, the third floor is, there's a warning, actually, and I think rightly so. It's the Holocaust exhibition.
Right.
I didn't go there because I've been there before, and it does upset you.
Yeah, yeah.
And they say they would rather you didn't take 14, you're only if you're below 14 there.
Yeah.
That's how moving this place is. So, and then above it now, is crimes against humanity. I mean, as if you couldn't go beyond the Holocaust, we have, as a human race.
Yeah.
And again, they're asking that you don't take anyone beneath the age of 16. You know, and that's quite frightening, isn't it, that you have to put those warnings on exhibitions.
Yeah.
But I've been to the Holocaust one. It is moving. You come out of there and you just have, you do, I mean, whether it's just for an hour, it might be a day, might be a week, you think differently about life, and it does make you think. But this place is beautiful. I went up to the next level, and you're on a balcony, and you really do get then a feel for the aeroplanes now. You get a better look at the Mustang with its checkered sort of like front end, like nose cone type fuselage. You know, you just think the Americans get it right, don't they, when it comes to colour sometimes.
Yeah.
But the Spitfire does look better, though. And then there's that German plane there, and I thought, well, I don't really want to pay too much attention.
What, the Messerschmitt?
Yeah, and you think, you know, but then you have to, because you think, well, you know, it did happen.
They were just the same young men from a different country.
That's right. I mean...
You know, and you, as you said the other week, when you see, you know, when you see that the soldiers now, from either side, no animosity at all.
No, and when you consider, like, what you see often when you travel around Britain, the twinning of cities, mm-hmm. what happened afterwards, how we twin places to get better relations.
No animosity. This wasn't about you as an individual. This was about a political movement that was way above your influence.
And there's a picture of a plane there, the BE-2A, that was the first plane to land, that model plane, a biplane, in France, like, in the First World War. I mean, and there's a couple of biplanes there, Sopwith Camel as well, and they're nice to see. And you see the change in aviation. I mean, and then that Polaris missile does, well, it's a bit worrying, that is, you know, because it's on the corner of, like, the submarine section, you think, oh, dear. You know, and you think...
I think they've diffused it, though, John.
No, but it's just... Yeah, oh, thank God. No, but I mean, imagine that.
If there's a bit of blue touch paper, it says, do not light this.
Glow in the dark. Yeah, you don't need to light this one up. No, but I mean, but the fact this just shows you the size, and you see what you're able to do then, and what you can do, what, 20 years ago, we're talking now, isn't it? And imagine what we can do at Trident.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I mean, well, the next situation is, and they've already got this, you won't have pilots going into action... You can have kids sitting at home flying on a computer.
Correct. Well, the Xbox controller, they've already done it with the PS2. It's happening.
Yeah. And so, and it means that they'll be recruiting 16, 17 year old, 18 year old kids because they're the whizzes at this. Mm. And, you know, they can sit at home and they can go and bomb whole towns in the Middle East. I mean, it's a crazy situation. And if you think about it, there seem to have been. I deplore war completely. I mean, there's nothing about any military action that I can see anything good for. But there was an honour about the Battle of Britain because it was a fair fight. You know, this was pilots versus each other. Hmm. And even though, we wanted to win and they, you know, all of theirs go down and none of ours do, the fact is this wasn't, we push this button and we obliterate that town. You know, this wasn't, it wasn't Hiroshima. And I think that that's what they talk about. They talk about what I love about the Imperial War Museum. It's a human story.
Oh, no. They got less. You can sign up again to be a friend or whatever. But this place, they can't put all their exhibitions on. Yeah. Like most of them, they've got too much stuff.
Yeah.
And what they have done is they run classes to do with the photography, to do with the writing, to do with the poetry. A massive. I mean, I nearly walked into a room by mistake. I mean, and literally, they got a class on. These are all adults.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and it was, you know, people were paying attention. This was 5:30 in the evening, and these were people that were paying attention. And it's good to see that, you know, you see grown-ups, like, sitting in a classroom, learning about the past.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't glorify war at all. I'll talk about something when we went down into the lower ground level. That's very interesting, walking through a trench. But I'll tell you what I did see, and which was weird, the fuselage to a Lancaster bomber, and they've cut the back off, so you just got the fuselage, and you can see into the cockpit. And then at the front, obviously, you get a look at the nose cone where a gunner would sit, and then there's an observation point right at the bottom. And again, just how it's riveted together. Mm-hmm. It's you know, we don't realise that how we have moved on,
mm-hmm.
how things have changed about welding and stuff. This stuff was just pop riveted.
Yep.
You know, and then windows, I mean, they were pretty drafty. And there was no, you know, not even no double glazing.
You'd have had to have a scarf on if it was going out on operation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, when you see them, you know, with the pit with the old big flappy leather coats on, they weren't for fun.
No.
That was for a reason.
You had three pairs of long johns on if you went out on a mission.
But it looked cramped as well. That's the thing as well. This wasn't roomy.
No.
And you just look, the equipment looked so old it did.
Can you imagine though, John? You're 20 years old.
Mm.
You've just spent 6 months training to be a pilot every single day. And then suddenly... You've been told, scramble. You get into that Hurricane or that Lancaster. You then sit there. You then take off with a full payload. Like, it's like a nuclear bomb you're taking off with half a dozen other blokes. You then got to fly 4.5 hours to get to where you're going, and you're having people shot at you, shooting at you for most of the time. You then release your load, which then means that your plane is completely light and going all over the place, and then you've got to make it back. And you're hoping that you're not going to get... Because you will get shot at some point. There'll be holes
again
in it.
Yeah.
And then you've got to get back. So you're actually out for about 12 hours. Freezing cold. Hardly any air to breathe. You had a full load on the way out. And empty, so you're... You know, like, and then you've got to land. That's the other thing. You've got a big tin can, no ballast in it. Then you've got to land.
Yeah.
Incredible. And you're 20 years old.
No, I know. Well, this is the thing. You have to understand that the people... that they depict, especially like in the Windrush, the water Windrush, and they make this clear. I'm going to go back to this because there was 4 photographs of these people that are living in Britain now and how they've aged. You know, that greyness, that look, you know, and you think they fought in a war,
mm-hmm.
were then sent back, then came here to work, and now they're here with families and how they've aged, you know, and it's like... Oh, it is amazing, because these people are still alive, as you've got to remember. Still alive, and they've got relatives. So it's not as if it isn't affecting people or touching people. It still is today, the wars, you know, because people do have relatives, and those stories are passed on.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be forgotten. But that balcony area is definitely... You need to get up there, you do, to look at the planes a bit better. You get them a bit more close up. You can see, you know, because they are sort of hanging there in front of you. When you go to... Just walk around the balcony area. You'll come across a boat, a little rowing boat. It was to do with a ship that was sunk, basically, by the Germans. And these guys did 70 days in this boat. And it's the actual boat. 70 days in the Atlantic. In this boat. 70 days. And that's quite frightening, that is, you know, to think that. And then I made the decision.
I mean, that's 2 months and a week.
Yeah.
You know, it's over. That's 9 weeks, man.
I think 70 hours most people would find. Yeah. You'd go a bit loopy.
Go stir crazy.
Yeah. I mean, but they survived.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the main bit about it.
Does it tell the story of what they did to survive?
Didn't tell the whole story, but it did have a little barrel. It showed a barrel light in the boat. Like, I mean, I'm going
to... Because you've got to catch fish to eat, haven't you?
You've got to do something. I mean, it's...
Because you won't have enough provisions.
You can't drink
the water. So, therefore, you have to actually catch fish. You have to let them dry out. And then you have to
pray for rain.
Yeah, pray for rain.
You know, it might sound daft, but you would pray for rain and try and collect as much as you can. Like I said now, I was on the first floor there. What I decided to do then was... I'm going to go down to the trench in the lower ground. And because there is, again, this is a day out. This is a day out. They have a cafeteria there if you want that. But, you know, you don't need to spend money on these things. It is free. This is a day out. There are some exhibitions here. But I went down to the lower ground. And what they have here is an exhibition on the First World War and a trench experience where you go in and you walk through a trench. And it's pretty real, actually.
Yeah.
You know, there's some good sound there and that. And
you're there for months.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing was, though, you're walking through it, and then I got to this one bit where you see a man having gone over the top, a man waiting to go over the top, and then a machine gunner next to him, and then the orders are getting barked out. After the next, next lot go type thing, and it's like after he's fired his machine gun. And then you see in the distance a bit of, like, explosions, which is with the British firing at their lines.
Mm-hmm.
A very real experience. You're walking through a made-up trench.
Mm-hmm.
And, it is. It's brilliantly done. It really is.
But there's another one, John. You're 18 years old.
Mm.
You've never had a girlfriend. You know, you've just worked out, you know, like in the baker's shop or something for a couple of years after leaving school. You suddenly think, oh, I'm going to go off to war because I've got the uniform. All the girls are whistling and winking at you as you march down your street. You then get out there, you're in that trench, and then suddenly somebody barking from the safety of a little, you know, like, well, there's no safety there at all, says, right, over you go, and then you run out. And then as, you know, like you're in the second or third wave, and you see the first wave go over, and as they go over, half of them fall back, shot. And then you realise that most of them have been shot within the first 10 seconds, and you're in the second wave.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's worse than being the first, isn't
it? Yeah.
In a sense, because you know what's coming.
You know what's coming.
You know you're going to cut the pieces by machine gun fire. Yeah. And the experience is quite real. I mean, it's not real, obviously, but you know, but you get the feeling. It's a good mock-up, it is. Then there's a chap injured. Then there's a guy then sitting in a little hole, just sitting there writing a letter. That's what he's doing. He's writing a letter to a loved one, and you hear him start speaking his thoughts, and it's beautiful. And then I've done what's happening lately. I think he bumped into things. I turned around and, oh, there's a bloke standing there. Like, it's quite dark, and I'm thinking it's part of the exhibition. He was real, and it's just another individual walking round. So it's getting spooked, I'm starting to, on some of these walks. I don't know what's happening, but this one is particularly dark, and you get a feel like you're at night, you know, and it's pretty good, because it just felt real, and the noise around you, that even the bit of smell they inject, it seems it's in there.
Yeah.
It's not big. It's not big. You're in there for what, 6-7 minutes? If you take your time, stop at 3 or 4 places.
Yeah.
And it just gives you a feel of how cramped the conditions were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only thing that was missing was mud. Like, that's what, you know, if you want to make it real, you would have just thrown a lot of mud in the bottom or whatever.
Yeah.
And really made it, and put wellies on or something. But you just see the cramped area they were having to live in. That's what people forget.
Yeah.
Living in. This isn't just fighting, they're living in the trenches. You have to remember that. And how holes were dug out. And you think you're looking at, you see them wildlife shows when people just cut a little hole out and you see the old mole on that. That's what it looked like, reminded you of. Very, very weird indeed.
And it's the human stories that I like to put in there. There's a wonderful book by George MacDonald Fraser called Quarter Safe Out Here. It's a definitive book on the Burma campaign.
Yeah.
And he was 21 at the time, and he was with a small company of 12 blokes, and they had to take out a number of points. And so basically they were out on a mission to, you know, like they were snipers. They were taking out all these, you know, like these gun points. And it was his job to carry 2 great big tins of fruit cocktail. So that after they'd taken out the half a dozen points that they had to do, they then had to set up camp. And so they all decided, when we set up camp, we'll open up these 2 lots of fruit cocktail. And, you know, that's our goal. You know, because we've got to do this job. And he talks about, you know, like, you know, some of the battles are horrendous and 2 people were lost and things. They then sat there, they set up their camp. They said, right, now then, let's have this fruit cocktail. And he opened them up, and it was 2 tins of carrots. They'd put the wrong labels on the tins. You know, so it's 2 massive tins that we get. And so rather than them have fruit cocktail, which they was looking forward to, it was 2 tins of carrots. And he just said, they made me stand outside the camp and patrol the whole night. He said, wasn't my fault. But it's, you know, all of those things, and that's going to happen to you. For years. You know, if you're out, if you join the war in 1940, that's 5 years you're going to be doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you're lucky.
Oh, no, that's right. I mean, if you, the saddest thing about wars, what people don't realise, is that if you're successful, they keep you going.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds mad. People go, what do you mean? Well, if you win a battle, you're at the front, it's like, well, go on, here's the next one.
Yeah.
It wasn't have a rest.
Yeah.
It was just carry on. And it's like, and you know, you just get pushed forward, pushed, because you're winning.
Yeah.
And,
it's colossal.
Imagine someone disliking you then in your command. That must be even worse.
Yeah.
But come out of that trench anyway, and what you have got then is a bit about MI5, MI6, Special Operations Executives, goes through to Special Air Service. Then it talks about, there's an area then about the First World War, the Second World War, beautiful regalia, the different uniforms. What if you're into your military now, this is interesting in the sense that you'll notice at the beginning of the First World War, they were still looking rather, you know, what you saw in the Charles Light Brigade, rather braided and dandy. And then you see the change that take place, as the war takes place, how the uniforms become more practical, less of the braiding upon them, just more, you know, like the Sam Browns, they call the, just got more sensible. You know, start of the First World War, you saw the Germans with a spiked hat, still, you know, by the end of it, they'd gone mad, effectively. And then you see, then when you go into the Second World War bit, how things had changed. And then you see then how technology started to take over and how they're pushing the boundaries out. And the bit about the SOE, you know, their job was to set Europe alight. That's what Churchill wanted them to do. Drop these people behind enemy lines and cause mayhem and havoc. And these people did. Very brave. Men and women, I should say, did cause havoc behind enemy lines. Very, very brave people. No doubt about it. It is just beautiful what they've done here, but doesn't glorify it. And I think that's a feat to the management of this of the Imperial War Museum. Mm. to be able to do that.
And as you said, they've got so much stuff there. Can I've told this story once before, John. About, I don't know, 25 years ago, I was around my mother-in-law's, and she used to take kids in at the summertime that were at a place called Atlantic College in Wales. And it's where young bright sparks from around the world go. It's a, you know, it's a college of excellence. And there was this one young lad, his name was Finjo Panzan Tenzin. And he was like 15, and he was incredibly intelligent kid from Nepal. And he was there. He's really, really lovely boy. I mean, I learnt a lot of spirituality from him. Anyway, he had written to the Imperial War Museum because there was someone from his village who had his picture taken in Burma. He was in the Burma campaign. I tell you what, this always gets me, this story, because we lived just down the road. I mean, my mother-in-law lived just down the road from here. So that wasn't that far. But anyway, he had arranged to go and see this picture. That, you know, like he'd written to him, and then he'd called them up and he wrote to them again, and they found the picture. It wasn't one that was out on display, but they found it in their archives, and they said, come see it on this particular day. And on this particular day, it was pouring with rain. And I said to him, I'll give you a lift. He said, no. He said, I want to walk. I said, why? He said, because I want to think about what I'm going to see. And then when I come back, I want to remember it. He says, because in 3 years' time, when I go back to my village, everyone will want me to tell them about this photograph.
Hmm.
And I kept thinking, I could never imagine being in that situation. No. Everybody, none of his village knew this geezer. You know, like he was a hero in this village. But he died before he got back there. And they knew that there was his photograph there, and they talked about it. And he was the first one that would ever see him. Absolute stunt.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. I mean, it's the stories of real people. That's what moves you. And you do see the stories of real. Like I said, the Windrush exhibition, it's real people. It's a moving place. And I've been to the Holocaust exhibition before. That's on the third floor. The Crimes Against Humanity, I know, I didn't have... There wasn't enough time there today, and you do need more time, but they do... The fact they put a warning on that, I think, shows you how severe and highlights, really, how we haven't learnt much, really, on this globe.
No.
That's the saddest bit. We have learnt a lot. We know how to drop a munition through your chimney stack, but we can't get a first-class letter through your door on time. Somehow, I can't work that one out.
No, and we can't feed loads of starving kids.
Yeah. But we know how to be cruel to each other,
right.
and places like this maybe are the beginning. You see, that's why you see the coach loads of kids. It's the beginning of educating younger people, showing them the madness of war, the technology of war, the evil of war, and how nasty we can be. And it is about youngsters. It is about the people behind. I'm 42 now, and it is about those in their 30s to 20s and in their early teens. It's their, for me, it's their planet it's going to be in the future, that they are the future. I mean, I've still got a few years ahead of me, hopefully, but this is an amazing place. We've got, like I said, lower ground floor, exhibitions, First World War, Second World War, D-Day, that's an important bit, conflict since 1945, so we look at other wars. They haven't just concentrated on the two great wars. Ground floors, your large exhibits, I mean, you can see why they're there. I mean, if you have trouble moving some of those tanks, you would right now. Love the British one, the Matilda. That was quite a cute tank, actually, in its colours as well. First floor was the Secret War, Victoria Cross and George Cross Gallery, large exhibits again, and into the survivalist seat, the Merchant Navy. We've got the second floor. There's a lot of artwork on the second floor. That's definitely worth a look. Beautiful artwork, stunning paintings, but very sorrow. And then the third's the Holocaust. Fourth is then the Crimes Against Humanity. I think if you go to the top two, there's some benches outside. I do think you need time to reflect. And inside there is a cafeteria and that wonderful little shop inside here. I did go in. They've got some brilliant posters. If you're into your posters, I mean, there's some stunning ones there, the Royal Navy. Just a beautiful one of a Second World War battleship. And it's been battered by the waves, but you can just see it's level. It's proud. The ensign's flying. some fantastic ones of Churchill, one with the old machine, where he's standing with the machine gun pose. Looks like a 1920s gangster, does he? He could have been next to Al Capone. But thank God he was our Prime Minister back in the, you know, 1930s and beyond. I mean, I'm in that, genuinely.
No, I know.
I mean, the man felt himself, he had destiny, and destiny certainly was for him to lead us through those darkened days. There's no doubt about that. Yep. Chartwell's the other place in Kent worth a visit, by the way, a home we lived. I've been there. That's superb. But these are obviously all replicas and stuff. Then they've got some of the tin stuff. And then they've got this stuff for kids, like ration books and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're just replicas, obviously, you know, like reprints. But it's just fantastic stuff to look at.
Yeah.
And you know what?
One square of chocolate every month.
Oh, well, they've got a lot of food that you can buy that's repackaged in as it was, you know. Yeah. And then there's a lot of stuff for kids there. And they've got the Ian Fleming exhibition on. That costs money.
Powdered eggs. That's what I want to try.
Powdered eggs. Yeah. Indian, yeah. I like powdered mustard. I mean, not sure about powdered eggs. What they've got coming up the weekend, 13th, 14th is this weekend, Christmas Truce. An actor in role will talk about the Christmas Truce in 1914 and how soldiers cope with winter in the trenches during the First World War. Now, those talks, and these are free, go on at 1 p.m, 2 p.m, and 3 p.m. They'll have someone, an actor, doing that, the actual, explain to you what it was like. And remember that period when there was a truce, which was just fantastic, wasn't it? The fact that ordinary men decided to say, no, enough's enough, we're going to enjoy Christmas. I mean, it didn't help a few of them out in the end, did it? I mean, far from it. Then another one then about We're All Born Free, 13th or 14th, again, that's between 11 and 5 p.m. Join this drop-in art activity and help illustrate some of the 30 articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that shape the world we live in. This is a joint event with Amnesty International to mark the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the publication of a specially illustrated book for children. The illustrator, Marcia Williams, will also be taking part. So, there's a lot going on here. A lot goes on for free. The majority's for free. The Ian Fleming one, no, you've got to pay for. I'd say, because it's Talk the Walk, don't worry about that. If you can afford to, then you want to do it, brilliant. If you can't, do you know what? There's a day out here. Mm-hmm. A day out.
For free.
For absolutely free. There's little cards that you can pick up. I mean, you know, we know we live in a world where people criticise other people for the colours of their skins. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a man who got a military cross recently, didn't he, I think, if I'm right? Or was
Johnson
it a VC?
Bahari, yeah.
He got a VC, wasn't it? Then we got Walter Tull, a black age in the British Army. Look at that man. We're talking back in 1916, this bloke was playing football and fighting for Queen and Country. Mary Seacole, a black Asian in the British Army. This lady was basically helping people, you know, making sure they were better. And, you know, there's something there for everybody. Again, they talk about the Belfast. The other places you do go to do cost. The Belfast, Duxford. Yep. There's another Imperial Museum I didn't notice now in Manchester.
Up north, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, fantastic, beautiful looking building. What is interesting, though, is Duxford look really good, but it costs money. But I did manage to, you can get actually like 20% off admission. So I mean,
sat in a Spitfire at Duxford. I was doing a programme, but and there was a bloke there at a Spitfire, and they were going to take it out for a fly. I said, can I sit in that? He went, yeah. So I could hardly get in it, John. I wouldn't have been able to get in it with a parachute, because I'm a big old unit.
Mm.
But and when I sat in there, and he just said, bit of a bone rattler, and he said the other one that I can't remember what the name of it is now, that was a better fly. He said, but this was wonderful, and he said it was made by grandmas. You know, like this wasn't made by this was all, you know, all of the Spitfires were made by women.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll be talking about you in the new year.
That's probably why they work so well, John.
No, but I mean, in the new year, we're going to be looking along Victoria Embankment, and there is a wonderful monument to the Battle of Britain, and it does depict the whole story.
Yeah,
and it does show you that the women working in the factories. And that's the thing about the posters. There's a lot of them posters there. They're showing you of calling the women to work. And you see the woman with a scarf on her head, dig for victory. They got all them replica posters. And they really are nice. Join the RAF, the British Navy. I mean, some of the poster campaign, the famous Kitchener one, obviously. I mean, here's one here, look. The downfall of the dictators is assured. And there you see a desert rat then looking in his shorts, you know. Literally like marching through the desert with a bit of smoke behind him. The British Navy guards the freedom of us all. And it did, you know, Britannia ruled the waves, and we still got a fantastic Navy today. Dig for victory, come into the factories, women of Britain, come into the factories with all the bombers and the aircraft behind them. And
I feel a bit of patriotism coming on, John.
God save our gracious Queen, long live our noble Queen, God save the Queen.
Thank you, Raddy. Right, it's great. Yeah. So, and what I think, John, about this is that doesn't glorify war.
It tells
a human story.
No.
Right, now, we've had more than three requests now for you to sing. Now, you did say you'd sing before Christmas. Are you going to do it this
week?
Next week.
It is next week. No, okay. Before Christmas, I will sing Frank Sinatra. Omar wants it. No, I'll tell you what, you're going to regret this.
Omar wants it, Steve wants it, and Mike wants it. That's all they want. Yeah. So, John, if anybody came in halfway through this, is this available anywhere else?
It will be, on freelondonevents.co.uk. It'll be available as a podcast. I finally got the pictures over to Colin. I did via John Capone earlier today. So they'll be going up about the last two museum walks, and then this will be going up over the weekend with the scripts as well.
Yeah,
definitely. What's shocking me is this is all free, and I think when you hear people saying there's nothing to do in London,
Then you laugh in their face.
I mean, we've only looked at three museums. I mean,
and there's dozens. There are dozens.
Yeah. I mean, there are too many to visit in a year.
Right, hang on a bit. We've got to have a go at Steve here. Steve in West Sussex. Now, he's one of the ones that said, when are you going to sing? But he starts off by saying, is this Talk the Walk or See the Museum? Now, he's only joking, of course.
No, that's right. No, but it's freezing cold outside.
Yeah, okay.
And what we decided was, how about, give people an option of being indoors.
Right, now this is where it gets cheeky. He says, did John see any intricate frilly masonry? Did he see any frilly bits at the Imperial War Museum?
Actually, do you know what? A bit of a lacking of the frilly bits on the outside. I mean, we've got the old, the crest we have, the Lion of the Unicorn.
Is it frilly?
Not really.
Then that's just lacking. I ain't going then. If there's no frilly bits.
Don't worry. Next week, we got some frilly bits coming.
I can't wait.
Don't worry.
John the Cabbie, thank you very much indeed, mate. Here we go. Right, John. I know that you're doing your big number next week, but join me on Harmony Vocals now, where we go.
Talk the Walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9.
Thank you very much indeed. John Kennedy, a licensed Hackney carriage driver here in London, and he comes in every week to do
Talk the Walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9.
Although, Ollie, I can't help but notice that last week he came in armed with the fattest burger in the world, but this week,
Talk the Walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9.
John, I'm looking forward to next week because there wasn't enough frilly bits for me this week, but you know what? I'm looking forward to it next week. Oi!